come home from the wars on 7th Avenue. I do declare there were times when I was so lonesome I took some comfort there. La 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 la.
Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Hello again, friends. Coming to you live from Vachon Island, Washington, this is the Voice of Vachon Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show radiating from the beehive of cultural awareness known formerly as the Gene Bosch Broadcast Studio in the bustling and bodacious heart of our verdant and pastoral island community. That was the voice of our founder, Brian Brown. Together, we the Brieflys aspire to keep Brian's brilliant flame alive by bringing you weekly episodes of intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy, and always guided by Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less, and we always aim to deliver more. Let me introduce the Brieflys and our guest very quickly, engineering the show from behind the big red button. Here in the Gene Bosch broadcast studio is our intrepid retired Alaska airline captain, Vashon Airport Commissioner, my fellow treetop flyer, and too many other posts to even mention. Truman O'Brien.
Hey, good morning. Good morning. I'm right here behind the big red switch for sure.
Good. Also present in the studio is part-time political ferry fixer, executive director of Vashon Household, full-time shenanigans coordinator, and youngest member of the Brieflys, Amy Dreher.
Hello. Hello. Good morning.
Good morning, Amy. Zooming in from some points north of the border, I think, is Roar Backpacker and, quote, how many more months is this administration going to be around, end of quote, inquirer Kevin Jones. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, good to be here with y'all.
Good to have you. We'll find out where you're at here in a minute. And last but not least, far from least, well, not actually last either, is historian, professor, and down under aficionado, and now even more in demand than ever, our guardian of the galaxy, Bruce Holman.
Hey, good to be here.
Good to have you. Joining us today is Vashon Film Institute director Richard Hazard, who will enrich and enliven enlighten us regarding the upcoming Vashon Island Film Festival. How are you doing, Richard?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having us and me here today.
There you go. And I am former constitutional law professor and samurai swordsman, not necessarily in that order, Craig Bellis.
And not lately, I hope.
No. Although it is in that order, now that I think about it.
They both require a sharp blade.
They do. Yeah, at times. Right. You know, that's Bruce, being a professor yourself. As per our usual practice, before we get into discussions of the film festival and talk with our guests, let's take a moment and check in with everyone and find out what good things you experienced during the past week. Amy.
Oh,
are
wow.
Are you checking your calendar?
Right? Sometimes, like, wait, what did happen to me last week?
It's all a blur.
Well, I will start with, which, of course, is the breaking news, and would like to get on record and happy to talk with anyone who wants to talk about the new selection for Fire Chief. We had a really great search process, really deep candidate pool, really just, it was basically sort of a selection of excellence, and the island is better for it in all of the ways. And just happy to talk about Bill McLaughlin, who we will be making an offer to join us as our next fire chief. And I think there's a lot of assumptions out there in the community and a lot of misinformation and a lot of folks who are sort of, you know, just tuning in now to the discussion, and happy to talk with anyone about what was a unanimous support from the commissioners for the selection of Chief McLaughlin. So
and that he's from where?
He's originally from Ketchikan and then was chief on San Juan Island for quite a while. Also chief in Ketchum, Idaho for a while and chief in little Colorado mountain town. So his wildland urban interface fire experience is incredible. And he's now at the National Fire Academy teaching about wildland fire. So we are really excited about what he's going to bring to the island. So, yeah, that was a really cool process last week.
Let's hope he only needs that for preventative purposes.
Exactly.
And I'm happy to talk to you about the prevention program he launched in Colorado that spun off into its own nonprofit, volunteer-led nonprofit, and making that Colorado town safer, just as we hope the island will be safer. In wildland fire prevention. So that was a really cool process last week. Had a lot of community stakeholders come in.
What's his first name again, Brian?
Bill. So William Bill McLaughlin. Yeah. And we'll have to get McLaughlin or McLaughlin out of him.
Yeah.
I just go back and forth just in case.
Right.
Yeah.
Is that the difference between a Scott An Irish? I'm not sure. I
don't know for sure. It could be, yeah.
Anything lighter that you engaged in last week?
Lighter? What did I... Well, gosh, what even happened this... What did I... I had a lot of fun this weekend, and I can't remember.
Well, that's good. That's a good sign. That's a lot of fun.
Oh, you know what? I went twice to Sugar Shack to see bands this weekend, and Friday night was great. It was kind of some ladies... rocking it at Sugar Shack there, and I can't remember the name that came out, the band that came on second. We missed their like first set, but had a really good time at Sugar Shack this weekend.
They've had some great musicians
Live music is happening on Vashon again. We are officially post COVID,
right?
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Bruce, how about you?
Well, good summer weekend. Middle of crab season, so every Sunday and Monday, crab season is open in Puget Sound, and we've been doing really well. You know, we've been getting dungies every week, and big ones, you know, 7.5, 8-inch dungies. My grandson, Theodore, who goes with us every time we pull, he is convinced we're going to break this Puget Sound record, which is 9.25 inches. And last week we got a really big one. We were thinking, oh man, it was like 8.25.
No.
So 9.25 has got to be just huge.
Wow.
But the grandkids are getting into it. And then this week they're in sailing camp, and Theodore came home and he said, sailing camp was just awesome. As only a 7-year-old can say.
Got riv.
And then this weekend was Pam and I's 29th wedding anniversary, so celebrated that with the family. And then my daughter is moving to Eastern Washington this month. They've been building a house over there for the last couple of years in Enetat, which is just south of Chelan. And so they've been living across the street from us for the last 3 years. Kids are in and out of the house all
miss
the time.
Her.
Yeah, it's going to be really quiet around our house, but they're very excited. And so now the process of getting a family moved before school starts, which starts over there on this, I think, on the 15th or 16th.
Oh, my God. Of August?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah. Eastern Washington starts really early. It's sort of like, what? It's still 100 degrees.
Yeah.
Over there.
I was going to say, I thought it was Memorial Day to Labor Day that you had, but you used to have, I think. That's a full week.
The full week.
That is. Truman.
Well, I had some excitement in my life this week. As I told you last week, I went into Seattle to visit a friend in the hospital. And while in town, I stopped at our bank branch that we use for our household expenses and made a little deposit. And so Thursday morning, I have a car appointment, a service appointment for my pickup in Tacoma. So we're up early, and my wife and I both were on our respective computers. And she says in her best Houston, we've got a problem voice, we're overdrawn at the bank. I said, what? We are? She said, yes, $41,000.
Oh.
I said, what? She said, what did you do? Of course, that's the next thing she said. You know, what did you do? I said, it wasn't me, I promise. Well, anyway, to make a long story
short.
You know
that big boat I've been looking
for? Yeah, exactly. That's right. That one I've been drooling over. Yeah, exactly. No, anyway, so it didn't make a long story short. I had to stop at the Tacoma branch and go in and say, what are you guys doing? Anyway, they couldn't fix it. They saw what the problem was, but they didn't want to fix it. Make a long story short, again, they finally got a hold of the original branch, and I'm driving to my appointment, and I get this call. This very apologetic president of the branch said, I'm so sorry. But anyway, they fixed it. It did get my heart rate and blood pressure up just a little bit. Yeah. A little bit.
Like I said to you the other day, why don't they ever make those mistakes in your favor?
Other way. That's right. I would have spent the heck out of that $41,000.
Yeah. It must happen.
Yeah. It does occasionally.
Yeah, it does happen. I thought that was kind of fun.
Oh, well, good. I mean,
afterwards, it was fun. It was
like getting a shock.
He kind of was. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Kevin, where are you?
Well, I see his picture, and he came on a few minutes. Oh, there he is.
There he comes.
Hey,
Steve. There he is.
We are currently in Anacortes, so we've crossed over the Big Divide, They let me back into the country, right? So I think I'm reasonably happy about that, because the consequences otherwise would not be good. although I'm developing a real affinity for Canadians, just so y'all know. I think it's been a couple of weeks since I've had a chance to join you. So yeah. We pretty much crossed over from like Port Browning, Sydney. We spent a little bit of time in Roach Harbor. We spent a little time on Jones Island. I had a chance to walk around Jones Island again, which is always fun. But the new place that we visited was Vendovi Island.
Mm.
And Vendovi Island, it turns out, was named by the Wilkes expedition Vendovi is the name of a Fiji Islands chief who apparently is ruthless and had been accused of murder and cannibalism of the crew of the U.S. whaling vessel Charles Daggett. Wilkes apparently took Vendovi on board, took him back to Britain for trial. He died the day after they arrived.
Oh. Wow.
But Vendovi led a pretty wealthy life. Apparently he had 50 wives and more than 50 slaves. So he wasn't too happy about being in captivity on a British naval ship, as you might imagine.
Yeah, I'll bet.
The other thing about Vendovi Island, if you know about Fluke, electronic measuring devices.
Oh, yeah.
Not John the fish. Fluke?
Not the fish. No.
Not the fish.
No, electronic.
Right, device. Yeah. John Fluke. John Fluke is buried on Vendovi Island.
Really?
Yeah, he actually purchased the island. And so I had a chance to walk around the trails on Vendovi yesterday. And there's a cemetery there, and apparently that's where John has laid his bones. He's a Tacoma, apparently has roots in Tacoma.
Yeah.
The John Fluke company, I actually applied there after college as an electrical engineer. They have tremendous measuring devices. He really set the stage for state of the art, I think, in terms of voltmeters and things like that. So, yeah. Anyway, good old John Fluke, had a chance to walk past him yesterday.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Well, can I ask a question then? If it's just a fluke, meaning it's just a weird anomaly, is that related?
No.
There's a lot of fluke lore.
Fluke lore.
Yeah, there's a lot of
there's a briefly word, fluke lore.
Add that to our lexicon.
Exactly. Yes,
exactly.
Along with lexicon. Well, I'm glad that somebody got a vacation, Kevin.
We're scheduled to be back on Vashon on Monday. We'll see if that happens. You know, it's in a boat, so you're never certain. But I should maybe be in the studio next week with you guys.
All right.
Well, that would be great.
Yeah, we look forward to it.
Richard.
Hello.
How are you?
Can you
tell us, have you done anything over the last week that didn't involve the film festival?
Very little. It's definitely top of mind. But my younger son, who lives in New York, is in town for a couple weeks. Oh. And my older son lives in Seattle, and we have a 14, 15-month-old grandson, and been able to spend some time together, which has been great.
Oh, yeah,
and
for
a nice
sure.
distraction from work.
Right. Right. Although your work is, as we'll find out, is invigorating.
It is. It's a pleasure and a privilege to be able to do it. And this week, of all the weeks of the year, it's a lot.
Yeah. It all comes.
Is it one of those jobs where you say, I can't believe they pay me to do this?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait a minute, you get paid to do that?
Sometimes.
That's funny. My week is nothing dramatic. I was really impressed with First Friday again. I was down here with the street closed, and it was so fun. It is so Vashon. I think I walked 5 feet, and I ran into somebody that I hadn't seen for quite a while, and they had a wonderful, you know, reapproachment, and then another 5 feet, and then another 5 feet, and finally, I told Lynette, my wife, I said, we got to get out of here. We got to be at somebody's house at, you know, X time. So we got there late, but we made it.
I even ran into Rich this weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. During First Friday. Yep.
Rich was making the rounds.
Yeah.
That's right. The other thing we did was some friends of ours who used to own an Italian restaurant over in Port Orchard took Lynette and I out for our birthdays. We don't exactly do our birthdays on our birthday, And they took us to their favorite restaurant and absolutely one of my all-time favorite restaurants in Tacoma, Asado's on 6th. Asado's is not one of our underwriters, but they might want to be after that little plug.
Yeah, Asado's on 6th. What, like where Asado. On 6th?
It's down there by what used to be the old firehouse, yeah. You know, sandwich shop kind of place, where the road kind of makes a jog.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Little. It's right next to a credit union, and it's in a little, kind of a little, what's the word I'm looking for? Not mall, but all
couple
the buildings,
right
all
next
the buildings
to each other.
Are right
yeah.
together.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm glad all the Vashon Islanders can find it now. That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, it's awesome. Yeah. It's really great.
And a little public service announcement, which I never said, and that's that it's right next to this bank, which is closed after 5 o'clock or so. So there's a big parking
there's
lot.
There's parking.
There's parking lot. Yeah.
That basically was my week, amongst other things. Hey, let's talk real briefly about today, which is August 5th, which is a significant day, as are all days. It is 2 days until the opening of the 4th annual Vashon Island Film Festival on Thursday, August 7th.
Woohoo! Mm-hmm.
That's an important event, to say the least. 86 days to another one of my, maybe even my favorite time on Vashon. Halloween.
Yes.
86 days until Halloween, October 31st. 142 days until Christmas, and everybody knows when that is, December 25th. And 455 days until the midterm elections.
And actually, is it today election day, August 5th?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, get your ballot in for the locals, for the local stuff.
That's right. And then in history today, in 1861, Abraham Lincoln imposed the very first federal income tax of 3% on annual incomes over $800.
Those mega wealthy.
I'm not sure what $800 translates into today's.
A lot.
Yeah. In 1914, the first electric traffic signal was installed in Cleveland, Ohio on Euclid Avenue. That's to be contrasted with the last stoplight on I-90, which was in the town of?
I don't know.
Where was it? On I-90, the last stop on the freeway.
Ellensburg.
No.
No.
Nope.
Like the last
possibly
town?
There was only one stoplight left on all of I-90 between Seattle and Boston.
Oh.
And there was a stoplight in this town on I-90. It wasn't a freeway then. It was Wallace, Idaho.
Wallace, no kidding.
Yeah, Wallace, Idaho.
An infamous place.
That's right, an infamous place. They turned the entire town into an historic district, and they had to raise the freeway going through there so it didn't disrupt any of the buildings because there was important stuff being done in those buildings. In 1957, American Bandstand goes from local at Philadelphia to national on ABC. Dick Clark headed up American Bandstand from 57 until 1989. And then finally, and I hesitate to mention this because an individual died this morning on the Bonneville Salt Flats attempting a particular kind of speed record, not the highest speed record. But in 1963, Craig Breedlove set a world land speed record of 407 miles an hour.
Wow.
In the Spirit of America, jet propelled vehicle on those Bonneville Salt Flats in Utah, which is interesting. That was 407, and today drag racers will go upwards of 445 miles an hour on a shorter than a quarter mile track. They shorten the track because it would get up to a ridiculous speeds if it had left. They'd left it at a quarter mile.
I was not aware of that. How much did they shorten it?
They shortened it by several hundred feet.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Huh.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it just got too dangerous to have the full quarter mile.
See, you listen to the voice of Ash, and you learn something new every time.
That's right. And a production car, the Koenigsegg, can travel at 310 miles an hour. And finally, the current speed record is the Thrust SSC at 763 miles an hour. And on one run, it did, in fact, run faster than the speed of sound.
Yeah, whoa. I was going to say, it's a little over 700 miles at sea level. By the way, $800 in 1861 is $29,224 today.
So if you made over 30 grand or whatever, you had to pay 3%. All right, today is National Oyster Day, National Underwear Day.
What?
Yeah, yeah. National Underwear Day, whatever that means.
Good the, thing I'm wearing something.
Yeah, I was going to say, expect everyone here to be compliant.
No jungle here.
And National Work Like a Dog Day.
Yeah, that could
Now, that is the perfect segue into our small talk guest, Richard Hazard. Hello, Richard. You've been waiting anxiously, I'm sure, to tell us about the film festival, the fourth annual Vashon Island Film Festival. It's parent, if you will, the Vashon Film Institute. But before we get into those specifics, we want to learn a little bit about you personally. If you could tell us about a little bit about yourself, your background, how you came to Vashon, how you got associated with the film festival.
Okay. Well, the not too short story is I moved to Seattle in 1985. I went to grad school in the early 90s to get my master's in education. And I wrote my master's thesis on media literacy and wanting to integrate media literacy into the K-12 education ecosystem. Mm. And I met a filmmaker in doing my research, and she and I produced two film schools for teens and two narrative short films through Langston Hughes Cultural Arts Center in Seattle. And so that's, and we did some documentary film work too. So that's kind of my film production experience a few careers ago. And then the school district on Vashon hired me in 1997 to start the Family Link and then the Student Link programs. Mm. So that's what brought me and my two young sons to the island. And my first week here, I went to play basketball at, I think, Chautauqua, and I met Jeff Zayer, who was kind of my oldest island friend, and his son, Mark Zayer, I met 20 years ago, who is island grown and the founder and chair of the Vashon Film Institute. So I've known Mark for a long time. I was on the island for 20 years, moved off for about 5, and I moved back 4 years ago. Mm. And a couple years ago, I started to talk to Mark about his vision for the Institute, of which the film festival is one key program component. And he's got a really great vision that was easy for me to get behind about how we can be supporting the island cultural economy and filmmaking regionally. He hired me last July to do some organizational development and strategic planning and program development work. So I formally started with VFI just before last year's film festival.
Wow.
And that's, I've been loving and being challenged by this work for a little more than a year now.
That's great.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Amy. You're chomping at the bit there.
Well, just sort of to follow up on you talked a little bit about the larger vision and the cultural vision. So, why a Vashon Independent Film Festival, and how did it come to be? And then don't forget to tell us when and where.
Thanks for that. That's important data to share. Mark, I met him when he just graduated college and was moving to Los Angeles. And he spent 20 years in the film industry, various producerial roles, making movies and in the sales and distribution end of things. He moved back to the island 5 years ago. And with COVID, wanted to do things to support the Vashon Theater. So the film festival was initially launched as a way to get people in community back to the theater. And then with that was a broader organizational vision for things beyond an annual film festival. It is the second weekend of August each year. And this year it's the 7th through the 10th. So this Thursday through Sunday. And I can share more information about our programming and that kind of thing, get into some of the details there. But we're very excited about the films, and, you know, we've got some events going on at the back lot. We've got a concert on Friday and a DJ on Saturday. And
a what on Saturday?
A DJ.
Oh, a DJ.
Kind of a dance party thing.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
And that's right next to the theater.
Right. That's a space between the theater and us.
Very basically. So, so you have the films, and when do they start at, what, at noon, 11 or noon or something?
I think it's noon on Thursday is our first film. And then at 3 o'clock we have our short cuts, which are local programming. So there's a third grade class at Chautauqua that made a documentary short about saving our orca whales. We're showing that. And there's an eighth grader at McMurray that we've helped produce a short comedy called Pizza Purge that was made at McMurray with middle school students. And then my younger son's got a short called Dune Boy that we're showing. And then there's a fourth film that we've accepted, and I don't know the details of that, but that's kind of local programming at 3. And then it's basically, I think, then Friday and Saturday and Sunday starts at 10.
Wow. So you've got, nine full-length
feature-length dramatic films and three feature-length documentaries, and then we've got a documentary shorts program that includes 5 animated shorts, 5 documentary shorts, and 5 narrative shorts.
Wow. Wow.
And then we also have on Sunday, there's an island, longtime Islander, Henry, who works at Thriftway, who was in a film that was made in 1995 called Milk of Amnesia that we're showing Sunday Sunday morning, and we're expecting a big island turnout to see Henry in action.
Let me think about that. Hold on. That's a lot of stuff.
It's a lot.
And obviously, the question becomes, if somebody hasn't been writing all this down, they can go back and listen to this show after we archive it here today or tomorrow. But the are there schedules out?
There are schedules sprinkled around town. The show, the poster for the film festival, and the program schedule. So they're at the kind of main intersections on the island, and VashonFilmInstitute.com and VashonFilmFestival.com both can
online
link you to.
Yeah.
You can buy tickets online. You can see summaries and trailers of most of the films, summaries of all the films, trailers of many of them. And so there's, you can buy tickets online or at the box office.
That's a really good website. I went to the Film Festival website and I looked at the various films and read the summaries, which are succinct.
Yeah. Well, shout out to our lead programmer Stacy and our lead tech web designer Eric.
Yeah,
they both have done great work.
Yeah, Bruce.
Yeah. So there's kind of a universe out there of film festivals. You know, I mean, people know about Cannes and those kind of things, Sundance. But how does Vashon Film Festival and Institute fit into that? Are there relationships, or do you develop connections, and and sort of why Vashon?
I wish Mark was here to answer some of that question. I would say that we're really late in the film festival year. Mark, over these years, and Stacy and others have been really smart in curating really award-winning films that have not been screened locally, and he's bringing filmmakers in. I think this year we're bringing more than 20 people in from all over the world. And they love it here. So it's Vashon in August is glistening and taking really good care of the filmmakers, putting them up in nice places and feeding them. And, you know, it's just such a nice community to be a part of. So from a professional and industry standpoint, there's a lot here to build on.
And it's not 100 degrees.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Good point.
So, and there are, I don't know how many film festivals there are internationally, but it has to be thousands. And so, you know, the vision here over time is to grow this and have it be a destination for filmmakers and cinephiles.
But there's also, I mean, you've built in a local component to it, correct? And
yeah.
That's always going to be there. And so it sort of has a dual function, if you will, almost.
Yeah, and I will say that at my core, I'm an educator, and taking our role as a film institute seriously, want to be building on that. So developing educational component and mentorship for filmmakers, existing and emerging, is going to be something we're going to be wanting to draw attention to.
And are you developing relationships with the Vashon School District, the Harbor School, those kind of things? And how do you see that developing?
So good question. So I guess by way of introduction, I'll say that VFI, the Film Institute, has three programming channels. So one is the film festival, which is a thing in and of itself. We'll talk more about that as we go. The other is VFI Presents, which are monthly films that we show at the theater, and we've done First Friday things in town. So it's kind of community programming that we're looking to build on. And then the third is what we call the Quartermaster Lab, or the Q Lab, and that is a consulting service to support existing filmmakers who are from the Northwest or want to make films in the Northwest and when and where possible locally. But within that, too, is a youth programming, what we call Frame Changers. So I've been working with two high school students to be doing documentary short film production. One's doing a documentary about Journeyman, One Village, which is a nonprofit on the island, and another is doing a documentary short about Women Hold the Key and want to be showing the community that we are supporting young people in community telling stories. And we also started a film club at McMurray, which has been a weekly pleasure of mine. And we've got this film that is an output of that. So, and looking to integrate that into the high school. And then Margie Busher is a third grade teacher at Chautauqua, and her class decided to make a film. And we want to be supporting filmmaking at really every level. This next year, I hope to introduce us more formally to Harbor School.
You know, just a real quick toss out. You know, I went to, do you remember they had three plays? I can't remember, or more, it was more than that. But the kids, there was second or third grade class, wrote the plays and acted in them. Did you folks see that? It was at VCA. This is earlier this year, I believe. And I was so knocked out by the originality and the you know, to the point of their plays, they were excellent. And I can't wait to see what these kids are producing for film.
Well, and to that point, there's so many. I would like us to establish our own equivalent of a tool library, a filmmaking tool library, where we can train people how to use equipment and they can check it out and be in community telling any of those stories. So there's all these opportunities where if there was a camera on what you're just sharing, it can live longer.
Absolutely. Wow.
So talk about the sort of financial end of this. I mean, how does it work? What does it cost to do this? What does it cost to buy tickets? You know, those kind of things. And how do you support bringing in 20 filmmakers?
Good question. The economics are challenging. We're a nonprofit, and many small nonprofits on the island face the same kind of challenges. Our funding comes from, so far, a small group of individual donors. We just got our first formal financial relationship with King County for Culture, which we hope to be able to grow on. And as we grow, there are different grant and foundation and tax dollar opportunities that we hope to tap into. The film festival cost, kind of the wholesale cost, is about $80,000. And that's, again, driven by a handful of private donors. Tickets are $10 a piece. We have a goal this year to triple attendance, and so I'm less concerned about ticket revenue this year. We've been handing out 500 bring a friend for free tickets, so just want to get people in town to experience the festival itself. So for $10 for any program, you can get two people in.
And is it each, is does each film Is there a fee for each film?
Yes.
That you see?
Although you can get an all access pass for $69. And then we have VFI membership opportunities, which I think is $80. And that gets all access pass to the film festival and one free VFI Presents pass per month at the theater.
Oh.
So it's, you know, it's a couple hundred dollars worth of value there.
And no federal funding.
No, not no. I mean, if we were counting on it,
we'd be in trouble.
Yeah.
So, hey, just one quick question on that: $80, is that for a person or is that a couple? Or
That's a person.
A person.
Yeah.
Okay. That's all I need. Thanks.
That's good value.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. I mean, I've been to the festival all the last 3 years, and I really do love these independent films. They are extraordinary.
Thank you, and we want to get more people out to experience them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of quality stuff out there that is not, quote, mainstream.
Yeah, well, mainstream is missing so much now. If you want to see quality film, you should go to independent film.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, of course, I've been a Ken Burns fan ever since the first thing I saw of him. I think The Civil War was the first thing he did. Just absolutely brilliant, mm-hmm. and I'm sure he's been gets people excited about doing film and being a mentor. So how do you get submissions? I mean, how do you get folks to submit their work to you to be shown here?
So Stacy Oristano is our lead programmer, and her job, largely through tracking existing for the known big international film festivals, Berlin, Toronto, South by Southwest, et cetera, Toronto. Did I say Toronto?
So who's in the circuit at the particular time?
So she's tracking award-winning or noteworthy films that are screened internationally, and then offering the film festival as kind of regional premieres. So, and that's her job, is to curate the movies. She's got good taste.
A friend of mine's two sons are filmmakers down in L.A., and they participate in these film festivals.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing what goes into both producing the films and then getting them shown and the response that they get. It's really, I find it fascinating. So, and you said there's going to be how many total films this year?
So we've got 9 features, 3 documentary features, and then short programming. So in total, I think it's 28.
Wow.
Maybe 30.
Yeah, you can camp out in the theater. Yeah.
I was just going to say, do we bring lunch?
Keep bringing those buckets of popcorn. You know?
So I have heard a good friend of ours say that she's worried about the schedule not allowing for food runs. So we'll see. We gotta figure that out. But I want to circle back to just a couple of the questions. One is the economics of where we are today versus where we want to go. I think I have these numbers right from Mark. He says internationally, I think these are 2024 numbers, that there were 7,500 feature films produced and only 800 of them received distribution.
Wow.
Sorry. So it's a small number that are commercially viable, and VFI is a nonprofit. We have our eye on becoming a sales and distribution agent, and we could be taking risks on more of those films to get them more broadly distributed. And we have our eye on, in within 3 years, being financially self-sufficient.
Mm. Nice.
So if you were to be involved in the distribution, then you would be collecting a fee from that.
Correct.
Effort. Wow.
Mm-hmm. And what's your relationship with the theater?
Well, we're deeply interdependent with them. I think I consider them, we're close personally. We have a joint operating agreement to get the backlot up to fully compliant code and to co-run it over a period of time. And we're fully supportive of the Wolcott family, Eileen in particular. You know, we have weekly business meetings we're having together to get ready for the film festival and sustain our programming in support of one another.
Mm, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kevin, if you're with us,
He is. Oh, there you are.
I am, yes. I'll go ahead and... Richard, I was taking a look back and thinking about the film industry in general, and I think, you know, many of our listeners heard about the SAG-AFTRA strike, right? Of course, the COVID disruption, then the economic challenges of people not going to theaters, the transition from in theater to streaming, the SAG-AFTRA, so many things. And now you talked a little earlier about independent films being like really high quality, the place that people want to go, you know, should be going, focusing their attention. Where's the movie industry in general in your sense? And I start to see now things like in theaters only. Mm-hmm. What do you make of all that, and where do you think that's headed?
Again, I wish Mark was here. He could speak in more detail about the business side of film today and where it's going. I think it's a very noisy world out there. There's a lot of stuff competing for our attention, whether that's TV, film. And so I, as an institute, want us to be thinking strategically about the future of film and how we can influence that. I think the economics for profitable films is a challenge. It's getting cheaper to make movies. I mean, the technology, the price points are, you know, lower and lower. I think we as an institute want to be supporting individuals who are interested in good storytelling. So I think kind of locally and regionally, we can have a positive influence on the quality of stuff that's being made. But at a macro level, I'm concerned about dwindling cinephiles. I think attention spans are shorter and shorter, in this TikTok age. And I'm, just wondering about how do we encourage and nurture people of any and all ages who are wanting to sit through, 90 plus minute narrative.
Lawrence of Arabia. Or yeah. Gone with the Wind.
Yeah.
Yes. 4 hours.
Yeah. I don't know if that's a full answer to your question, but that's my initial response to it.
Well, I'll just throw something out and speculate. We're talking about how do we reach people given how much news and how many different sources of information. And one thought that's come to our attention is, short videos. Reels is one of them. Mm-hmm. That you mentioned, TikTok. I don't know. Are we as a culture transitioning, do you think, to more sort of messaging through video? And maybe it's healthy in that regard? I speculate. I just throw that out to see if you have any comments about that.
I've been wondering about developing movies with chapters.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a feature film has 9 chapters, and that is that a way to kind of mediate the shorter attention span thing that's emerging in all of us? I know my attention span is shorter today than it was 10 years ago.
That's an interesting point. I would think that movie makers are confronted with that issue as to whether or not they want to make a movie or they want to make a series, which is chapters in a sense.
And I will say over the last 20 years, I've spent more of my leisure time watching episodic television. Mm-hmm. More than movies. Mm-hmm. So, and I think that, HBO is the prime example of they just opened up a portal for really good writers who would rather invest their talent in a series than a 90-minute film.
You know, by the same token, though, I've just been watching on HBO, watching the documentary on Billy Joel.
Mm.
And I think those things are an hour and a half or maybe even 2 hours each. And there are two segments of it. And gosh, they're just, you're just sucked in.
Yep.
And it's like Ken Burns, when you start watching him, you're just sucked into it and you can't turn it off. So I'm wondering, there's both sides of that. By the same token, we became huge Ted Lasso fans, and those are really short segments, mm-hmm. but they really grab you as well.
Well, who told you about Ted Lasso?
I wonder who that was.
Greg, Greg fishing.
Yeah. But, oh, my gosh, yeah. But, you know, I mean, what a wonderful thing.
You know, Saturday Night Live had, some time ago, they had, I can't remember, I think it was Saturday Night Live, there was a song that they were singing, and it was entitled Find Me a Short Movie That I Can Watch Before I Fall Asleep at Night in Bed. You know.
Yeah. Well, I think, too, you know, it's... my attention span has gotten shorter, but I think a lot of it too is it's so hard to find good quality things that you're willing to, you know, my attention span is short because I'll spend the first 10 minutes and I'm like, this is terrible. Yeah. You know, like I just, you know, and with an episode or a TV show or something, they got to get you in 10 minutes, right? Because they got 60 minutes instead of 2 hours to pull you in. So they've got to show you who they are quickly so I can decide who they are quickly. Yeah.
There's actually been a lot of research done on how long does it take to hook somebody, and it's actually way shorter than 10.
It is. It's very fast, and I kind of feel like as a consumer, I know more and more quickly, do I trust you as a writer? Do I trust you as a filmmaker? You know, are you going to speak to me during this time? And I feel quality, like you said, quality will still, people will still hang out for 3 hours and episode after episode, but so often studios now are drawing things into episodic because they know they can get your eyeballs on it longer. Right. Yeah. There's so much filler in things that are longer now and even episodic now because it is capitalist, right? Like you got to get paid to make art. But I find too, my attention span is often so short because there's so much out there that I'm like, nope, 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 nope.
And, you know, it's also, it's not just film. I mean, the publishing industry, you know, the introduction of graphic novels. I mean, it's just sort of across the board, this sort of shrinking attention span is challenging old ways of doing things. And so it's not just the film industry that's just confronting it. It's sort of every communications media is trying to deal with that.
Yeah, and I'm kind of fascinated. I do some, you know, I go to YouTube. You can always find good guidance on YouTube, you know, how to fix your hydraulic floor jack kind of thing. And I don't pay YouTube. You know, I'm the free writer on that. But they have the ads that come on. And this, you can skip this ad in 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. And Richard, you were talking about how long does it take to hook somebody's attention. I am fascinated in the communication strategy of what they do in 5 seconds. To where you say, okay, tell me the next sentence, right? So there's a lot there, I think, to that art is quite captivating in my mind.
Right.
Well, I think back about it. If I'm writing a story, like I have stories that I've written about my flying career, and I always want to start the first sentence or two with, you know, there I was, you know, kind of a, again, to set the hook. And then I can back up and say, well, actually, I was arriving, blah, 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 blah. But that first sentence or two, you want to grab somebody with, you know. So it's like you said, Bruce. It's writing. It's everything.
So there you go. You got the advice of wannabe filmmakers.
Mm-hmm. we're ready. So, curate us.
So over time, we're going to want our doors open to hear what you're interested in doing and provide you the resources and the training and mentorship with which you can do it.
I just want to ask about the you were talking about the lending library, like the film, like the tool library. Would that be at the high school, or is this something separate? Or
I don't know. You know, our office is at the Sheffield Building, which is right near O Space, and we're exploring a collaborative effort with O Space to convert part of their warehouse into a soundstage, so we could have really good in-class filmmaking infrastructure on the island. I think the music instrument library is at O Space, as is the tool library. I'm agnostic as where it could best be served. I do like the idea that it would be at the high school.
You know, you were talking about the industry generally here a minute ago, and I just did want to mention one other thing. Certainly there are film festivals that are doing better than ever, including ours here on the island. But I guess Sundance, got so big that it's now moving to Boulder, Colorado.
I think it moved because of the politics.
Interesting. I've read a couple articles on that, and they're very careful the way they write these press releases.
Well, I have no doubt they have interdependence with federal dollars and need to tread carefully.
Yeah.
But my understanding was that they're, Utah is not necessarily gender friendly. And from a politics standpoint, and they wanted to move to some place that was more inclusive.
They did talk about the criticism of certain sexual kinds of scenes at Park City that ruffled some feathers in the community as well. So,
yeah, Boulder's going to be pretty reasonable in those lines. Yeah,
College town. Yeah,
yeah. I'm sick of that.
Well. You know, I wanted to ask you, Richard, I think you mentioned that one of the best ways to find out about the festival are the websites that you mentioned, which are pretty straightforward.
VashonFilmInstitute.com and VashonIslandFilmFestival.com. And that's for the festival this weekend. That's the place to go.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, it's it's a very good website and easily maneuvered. And it also gives you the opportunity to buy tickets on that, does it not?
Yep. And we encourage it. It's helpful to us on a number of fronts if people are able to buy them up front.
And if you buy them online up front, do you pick them up at the theater when you first arrive?
Yeah, you'll get a electronically generated thing that you share at the box office.
Okay.
So you just bring your phone and click it, kind of. Okay.
And you can donate there as well.
Yes. So thank you for mentioning that.
I was just going to ask about that. Yeah.
Part of my work has been to develop a strategic plan that over 3 years we can become financially self-sufficient, but we are looking for individuals and organizations that are able to make donations that are meaningful to them to support that, what I call mission, that people who are mission aligned with us that are able to make a contribution monthly or as a one-off. And, as we're evolving, we're going to be doing a lot more grant writing.
That's great. There's also a separate section on that website for people who want to volunteer. Do you think you still have any need for volunteers?
The short answer is yes. So anybody who, I think we had 62 volunteer slots identified. I mean, this is part of the week. It's like, who do we need where? So we need support at the box office. We're going to have a booth, obviously, and having people there. We have theater ambassadors. We need help with transportation. Again, we're bringing 20-plus people in and housing them all over the island. So getting them from the ferry to their Airbnb or equivalent and then into town and back is an ongoing transportation need there. And anybody who volunteers can get a pass to the festival.
Oh, okay. That's a good Benny.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Is there anything that we forgot to cover that you wanted to touch upon before we say thank you? Well, first of all, tell us your official title.
I'm Director of Strategy and Development for the Vashon Film Institute, and that includes this week a lot of a lot of other stuff outside.
I was just going to say that. That's pretty broad, isn't it?
Yeah. There's so that's my official title, and I love the work and where we want to go. And part of our job and intentionality is to raise island literacy about what VFI is and what we hope to be doing on island and beyond over time, and invite anybody to look us up. And after this weekend, I'll make time for anybody to talk in more detail.
Well, I'll tell you, Richard Hazard, thank you very much for being here. It's been enlightening, and as a fan of the film festival, I encourage everybody to at least check out one or two of the movies or films. You would be amazed, and you'll be amazed in a if you're not familiar with these independent films, how they differ from the big corporate production kind of films in a good way. how they differ. So
yeah, it's an amazing opportunity. Vashon so often has things that you would never have a chance to see right in your tiny little hometown. You don't have to go over to Seattle and pay a bunch of bucks, you know, to do the Seattle thing or Tacoma. You just really get to see something amazing right here on the island at one of the world's best theaters.
It's going every day. It gets better, mm-hmm. and you guys are really contributing to that. I'm really impressed.
Yeah.
And I did want to reiterate something that you said that is oftentimes missed by people. These are not films that are first showings. Some are, of course. But many of these films are international film festival award winners,
right,
that have been selected to be played in this film festival here on the island. So you're seeing the creme de la creme. Foreign films, American films. There's a few that I really am looking forward to. With that, I thank you very much.
I can't thank you enough, each of you, for being interested in sharing the time and space. And I also, over time, think that the Film Institute and Voice of Vashon have a very compelling shared Venn diagram space.
I do, too.
Together.
Yeah, I think for sure. All right, we've only got, a minute and a half or something left, minute. We could talk about Epstein Gate in the last 60 seconds or the proposal to kill the endangerment climate rule by the EPA in those last 60 seconds. But let's just say those are horrible, horrible things that are going on nationally and the effects that they're having internationally. Amy,
yep.
What's on tap for next week?
What is on tap for next week? That would be August 12th,
yep.
Right? I live by dates. That'd be August 12th. I am really excited. We're going to have Heidi Jackson and the Dove Project in.
Oh, great.
And, talk about some really terrible things that are happening federally that are impacting us right here on Vashon Island. The Dove Project does really critical work around gender-based violence and around, a lot of different traumas that happen on the island and in our communities, and they are being so, sort of circumspect now in what they can talk about and how they can really work with people, right? Like, funding has really impacted what a one-on-one conversation can be between someone who's trying to provide service and needs service. So really excited to have Heidi and Dove here to talk about what's going on.
Wonderful organization. I was privileged to be on the original board of the Dove Project, and I was just very impressed. Okay, for Richard Hazard, Amy, Kevin, Bruce, Truman, and me, Craig Bellis, thank you for joining the Brown Briefly today. Until the Brieflies return next Tuesday morning at 11, please enjoy all that life has to offer, more or less. Still, ride over me. Be still.